This whole week of learning has been sponsored by Sarit and Hillel Silvera and Josh and Melissa Mitgang in memory of their dear mother, Linda Mitgang, Devorah Bas Yosef Halevi, as well as today's shir should be a continued s'chus for a refuah shlema for Shimon Yaakov ben Rafael Shira, who is in need of a refuah shlema, as well as Ariella Bas Malka, who just had a surgery yesterday and needs a refuah shlema as well. And we ask that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should send all of them the proper shluchim to do the right things that need to be done in the right time. In last week's shir, we began a discussion about Torah perspectives on voting in general. And in the context of that conversation, we began to touch on the complicated but delicate balance of the life of the Jew in Galus. We mentioned about Avraham Avinu being at the same time a ger and a toshav. In the same way that he is separate and distinct and unique, he also sees himself as somebody who is a toshav, somebody who is a resident, and who gets involved in all that goes on in the surroundings that he finds himself. So let's continue developing this theme. And by way of introduction to what we're going to talk about today, I want to look at a letter that was written by the great Nodeb Yehuda. The Nodeb Yehuda lived in the 1700s, passed away in 1793. He was the Rav of Prague, but I think that is understating his importance and his relevance to the Jewish people. He was not only the Rav in Prague, he was a great Torah leader of his generation, but beyond that, his words continue to reverberate in every halachic conversation today. So many hundreds of years later, the Nodeb Yehuda was someone who really has made a lasting impression on all of Jewish community life and the way halacha is practiced for all future generations. So let's look what he writes. What I find fascinating about this is that he really gives us a perspective about what it is that we're discussing here. And he says the following, Pen Yomar Ha'ish, maybe somebody will say, Shoresh Pore Rosh Vel'ana, maybe you have a primitive, barbaric person, which is a extreme terminology to use, HaHolech Achar Shriris Libo V'Yomar, maybe you have a person who will say, Shakala nimtza kasa b'svarim v'halachas me'azharas gedolos v'chiyuv mora v'kavod v'abas ha'malchus. We have a concept, if you look through the Chumash and you look in the Gemara, you will find that there is a set of halachos that we will find that are about respect and deference that we're supposed to have to the malchus. The second parak of Masechta Sanhedrin talks about how we're supposed to treat a melech and how a melech is supposed to behave. We have many halachos where we have outlined for us how this is supposed to work, what the relationship should be. So writes the Nodeb Yehuda, there are those who mistakenly said that all of those halachos that we speak about are only al melech Yisra, that it's only relevant to a Jewish king. Shekishahaya lahem melech, when the Jewish people had their own king, lachein amarnu, and therefore he says, because I've heard people say that the only respect or deference that you need to have is for a Jewish king living in the land of Eretz Yisrael when we have our own Malchus. Lachein amarnu, therefore he says, I felt it was important, lahatik kol hanimtza kasa b'svarim shalanu, I needed to take my corpus of knowledge and all that I know and present it to the Jewish community that they should know that this is a great mistake. And what does he say? Sheha omer kein ta'av v'sheker anu. Somebody who says that is mistaken, they're misinformed. V'sheker anu, and it is simply not true. Vein chiluk bazeh bein melech Yehudi o eini Yehudi. Writes the Nodeb Yehuda, it makes no difference if the governing body is a Jewish government or if it is a government that has not at all any connection to the Jewish community. Va'anachnu, and he says, kulam mechuyavim b'chiyuv gamar min ha-Torah. That is a very extreme language that he uses. We are all obligated, b'chiyuv gamar min ha-Torah. Like when we talk about keeping Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras HaMishpacha and everything else that a Jew is supposed to do. Writes in Nodeb Yehuda, this is no different. Va'al pidin, based on the letter of the law, lefakeach betovas ha-malchus she'anachnu yoshrim tachas memshalto. We have an obligation to contribute, to participate, and to commit ourselves to the well-being of the local municipality, of the government in which we find ourselves. V'kavachomer v'kol shekein, shelo yasa chas v'shalom eizadavar ha-misnaged la'adonei eretz ha-medina. He says, dare a person think that they should do anything against the government, He says, I don't even have to bring proofs because this is obvious. Writes a note of Yehuda, we have to try to encourage our community members to have respect for the government. And he goes on to explain how important it is for the Jews in his community, and I think he's talking to Jews of all communities, that wherever they find themselves, it is important that they understand that they have a civic responsibility and a civic duty toward the Memshela, toward the government in which they find themselves. There's a very amusing Gemara in Maseches Menachos, where the Gemara describes the design of the architecture and the design of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara there tells us a comment. Shar HaMizrach, which was the eastern gate of the Beis HaMikdash, what did it look like? So the Gemara writes, Alav Shushan HaBira. It had on it a beautiful, I don't know if it was a painting or an engraving, of Shushan HaBira. Now what is Shushan HaBira? We're all familiar with that from the Purim story. Shushan HaBira was the capital of Persia. That was the governing body at the time of the Bayis Sheni. And the Gemara finds it very strange. My taima, when we're building a home for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we're building a Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, why would we have an engraved image of Shushan HaBira on the entranceway, on the door to the Beis HaMikdash? It sounds so strange. This is the Gemara's question, my taima. Writes the Gemara two interpretations, but one interpretation is, Kidei Shetehe Emas Malchus Alehem. Says Rashi, Shetehe Emas Malchus Paras Alehem V'lo Yimardu Vahem. To remind the Jews, it's wonderful that you have the opportunity to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you are lucky that you have the opportunity to be in Yerushalayim and to celebrate a relationship in the Beis HaMikdash. But don't forget, you are under the rulership of Shushan HaBira. And says the Medrash, Kidei Shetehe Emas Malchus Paras Alehem, Rashi explains, that we should have, even when we're in the Beis HaMikdash, even when we're serving our Kadosh Baruch Hu, don't lose focus. You are still under the leadership of Shushan HaBira. And that's important to remember. Even on the doors of the Beis HaMikdash. And I found that to be a fascinating Gemara. Because to me, I would never have designed such a thing. And when we think in our davening every Shabbos, when we make a tefillah for the Memshela, when we make a tefillah for the local governing, and for all that we live under their leadership. So there are many people talking, many people laughing. Now again, those same people who are talking are probably talking during other parts of davening as well. So the same disrespect that they have for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they also have for the Memshela. It's the same kind of people. But if you are the kind of person that is quiet the rest of davening, maybe there's a reason why one should be quiet during this part of the davening as well. It's important that we remind ourselves, even in the Beis HaMikdash, even in the Beis Hashem, even in a Beis HaKnesses, of Shushan HaBira. It's not to make the Beis HaKnesses a political place, but rather to make us understand that here, while we are in Gullis, we have certain understandings of how things need to work, and what our allegiances need to be, and what kind of respect we need to show toward the governing bodies that are our leadership. The Chasam Sofer, who we know was the leader of the Jewish community in Austria-Hungary in the early 19th century, the Chasam Sofer writes a drasha. And this to me is shocking. I cannot fully appreciate or understand it, but I find it shocking. And this letter was written actually in honor of the 60th birthday of some government official. I don't exactly know the history there, but some government official was celebrating his 60th birthday. The Chasam Sofer was called to task on why he was celebrating along with them. You're the Chasam Sofer, you have nothing better to do. You're going to go to a birthday party of whoever it may be, the governor. And the Chasam Sofer wrote what in his hashkafa he felt should be the perspective and the attitude of every Jew that was living in his community at the time. And he writes the following, and he brings from a pasuk where we're told by Yitzias Mitzrayim, V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. We're told that the Jewish people left chamushim from Eretz Mitzrayim. Now Rashi quotes a famous medrash, that he reinterprets the word chamushim doesn't really mean what it's supposed to mean. Chamushim means only one-fifth of the Jewish people left Mitzrayim. Many of the Jews were left behind. They could not be a part of this whole dream, of this whole understanding of what Geula really means. So they stayed behind. They didn't believe it. And 1/5 of the Jewish people came out. What a tragedy. But that's not really what the Pashup Shat in the Pasuk is. That's the Medrash has an interpretation. What does it mean, v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim? What's the simple understanding of the word? What? Armed. It means they left Mitzrayim and they were armed. They looked like they were soldiers. Okay, so says the Chasam Sofer as follows. Pirush, what it means is sheyatzim uziyana b'kli zayin. They went out with guns. They went out with spears. They went out armed. They were prepared to fight. Ke'orche ha-melchama, the way that an army would go out to war. Now says the Chasam Sofer, v'tzarech iyin gadol. This really doesn't make sense. The Torah doesn't just tell us details. It doesn't say they were wearing this color shoes, or they were all wearing a shirt that looked like that, or a robe that had this implication. It's irrelevant. What do we care that the Jewish people came out with swords, and they were all dressed in military gear? What relevance does that have to the story? And beyond that, he says, number one, le'ezet sorech alu chamushim, u'le'ezet sorech odinu zebet pasuk. Halo ra'inu, don't we find, kisheradfu mitzriyim achareim. So what happens? You have the Jewish people come out, and they're all in military garb, ready to fight. What happens? They turn around and they see the Egyptians, nosim achareim. They see that the Mitzriim are following them. And they realize they're in trouble. What should be the instinctive reaction of all of them at the time? Turn around and fight. After all, you're armed. V'chamushim ala b'nei Yisrael. And what happens? Hashem yilachem lachem ve'atem tacharishu. Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'yiso. So you have an army of people all ready for war and nobody lifts a finger. They turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why is that the appropriate response? Shouldn't they first fight? At the same time as they're davening, they should do the hishtadlus. That's what we always do. We have a two-pronged plan of how we fight things, of how we get over the hurdles, the obstacles that face the Jewish people. So why do we find that the Torah tells us they had all of this military garb, they were ready to go, and then when it came time to fight, nobody did anything? As he writes, V'asas cham al kanfei nesharim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said he was going to give them an anei kavod, he was going to take care of them, and yet he says, with all of that, lo al yidei cherev v'chanis, nobody had lifted a finger. So why then does the Torah tell us that they needed to go out with arms? What was the reason for that? Look at the next paragraph. V'hanir le'ani astaiti, number 17. Ki Yisrael hayu gibore korach l'molchama. They actually had a very effective army at the time. V'shishim ribu gvar mi b'nei esrim. There were tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who were armed altogether. Melvad b'nei yidches v'yutes echudoma. Only the count that we have in Chumash is only over the age of 20. But there were plenty of able-bodied individuals who were younger than that, or perhaps even older than that, and they are not in the count. So you have millions of people in this army of Jews. Am rav miyod chamushim, and every member of the Jewish people is armed, mizuyanim, they're ready to go. Vishnei sarei tzavos Yisrael kemoshe v'Aaron. You have Moshe and Aaron leading the fight. Moshe and Aaron who are hearing directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu exactly what should be done. Is it possible to lose such a war? Ein safek, there is no doubt. Im hayu omdim lemelchama negdam, if they would have waged war, hayu notzchem, they would have won. There's no doubt. Rak az hayu lechal hapachos shvichas damim gadol, obviously lives would have been lost on both sides. V'harbe ma'aracha mul ma'aracha, there would have been a lot of fighting back and forth in both directions. Shahare me'ikara nisyari paro mipneim. Let's think back to the beginning of the story. Paro was concerned when the Jewish people were growing, and he says, "Pen yirbe, maybe they're going to grow too large." V'haya ki sikrena melchama, and then a war is going to come, and what's going to happen? We're going to be overtaken by this nation. That was Paro's concern, and he had a legitimate concern. He was right. So what happened? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells them not to. Look one line further. Why not? Asher haya achsanoi lahem b'shas hadchak. Because they were the host country. Hagam ki shibdom ba'avoda kasha. They made the Jewish people suffer for hundreds of years. We were oppressed under the Egyptian ruler, but yet they were still the host country. Says the Chasam Sofer, you don't turn around and fight. You turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you ask Him to take care of whoever needs to be taken care of. And He explains why it is that they had to go out with arms, but why it is that they never used them. How does that translate into modern day history? It's hard to understand it. Would you say, again, I find this hard to translate into the current situation that we're all familiar with, but would you say that Nazi Germany shouldn't pay a price for what they did? Of course they should pay a price. I think that's a misrepresentation of what the Chasam Sofer writes. But at the same time, the Chasam Sofer says there needs to be this understanding that if Jews lived in a certain community for hundreds of years and they allowed you to stay there, even though there may not have been equal rights and even though you may not have had everything you wanted to have, writes the Chasam Sofer, you still need to have some kind of recognition for what it is that you got from that location. And that to me is a shocking statement of the Chasam Sofer. You go a little bit further and you find Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, who was a Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim, writes something amazing that I think is extremely relevant to our discussion as well. And he tells us what in his mind is very disturbing about Jewish communal leadership. And he says as follows. He quotes from his Rebbe, the Chafetz Chaim, HaChafetz Chaim HaKadosh HaYaragil Lomar. My holy teacher, the Chafetz Chaim, used to say, Yesh b'chayi ha'adam, we all have situations, experiences in our lives. Rigoyim asherhu nelatz lahachlit b'inyan yadua. Where we are pressured, where we're under duress, to make a decision about something. Ve'eni yodeh ma'la hachlit, and I'm indecisive. I don't know which way to go. I have this enormous decision to make in front of me, two impossible choices. I don't know what the right thing to do is. There are times when this issue that I'm facing is something that can destroy my life. If I make the wrong decision, I can end up paying a horrific price for it. And when I don't know what to do, I throw up my hands and I give up. I'm stuck. And as this is unfolding, Lochish lo echad al azno, somebody whispers into your ear. A supportive friend comes over to you and says, Hare tuchal lishol ba'atzoso shel Hashem yizbarach bechvodo ba'atzmo. You have this impossible challenge in front of you. You don't know what to do. I'm going to give you an idea. I'm going to tell you where to go where you can have a conversation with the Ribono shel Olam. He's going to tell you exactly what you should do. Ech ze yishtomem ha'adam. How overjoyed, how delighted would a person be to be given that opportunity? Living a life of confusion, not knowing what to do with this insurmountable challenge. Somebody comes and tells you, I'll give you the secret. How often do you have a person who's facing an issue, a health issue or whatever it may be, and they run to a makubal? Why do they go to a makubal? Because they believe that this person has some kind of insight that they may not have. Maybe they have a perspective that I don't have. And if I follow that, maybe I'm following something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put out into the world, a message for me that I'm just not in the frequency to understand. Correct? So imagine I was given the tools to know how to do that myself. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, Be'emes amar HaChafetz Chaim, Nitna efsharazu l'chol adam ha'adam. This opportunity is granted to every individual. Yesh lanu Torah ha'kolelas tshuvos ha'kol she'elo sheba'olam. We have a Torah that encompasses, that includes the answer to every predicament, every dilemma, to every situation, and to every eventuality that will come up in our lives. Leka midi de la remiza be'araisa. There is nothing that does not find its source in the Torah, in the corpus of Torah somewhere. Ha'pitaron shemotzim osa b'Torah hu atzas Hashem. We need to realize that the advice and the recommendation, the instruction and the guidance that we get from the words of the Torah are the recommendation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Yesh Ladas, he says, one always needs to know, Ki Milvan HaMitzvos VaHayisurim HaKsuvim BaTorah, that aside from all the rules, all the laws, all the regulations and the mandates that we have in day-to-day life as a Jew, Rishumos Sham Gam Eitzos, the Torah also shares its feelings, its impressions, and its opinions with us. Eitzos Menusos, and these are opinions that have been tried and tested. Kishem Sha'a Torah Nitzchasi, and the same way we understand that Torah itself is constant, is perpetual, and it is eternal. Kach Gam Eitzos HaTorah Nitzchahi. So too, he says, the opinions and the feelings of Torah are also eternal. It's not just that we keep Shabbos forever and we daven forever and we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu forever. There's so much more than that. The opinions, the attitudes of Torah are also of eternal nature. And he gives us an example. The Gemara says in Maseches Bava Metzia that when a person is investing of their own money, they should try to diversify. It says you should put shlish b'prakmatia, you should put some of your money in real estate, you should put other money in other endeavors. So the Chafetz Chaim asks, let's say I decide to put all my money in one stock, General Mills, and I decide not to diversify. So am I violating an Isser of the Torah? No. What am I doing? I'm being unwise. I'm being foolish. The Torah gave me a great idea. The Torah shared its opinion on when you're engaging in investments, how should one do it? You're choosing not to listen, you're a fool. You didn't do anything wrong, but it's just foolish. And says the Chafetz Chaim, the last line in this paragraph, it's important, he says, Drushos Einayim Me'iros Liros HaSakasa BaTorah. Not everybody has the proper eyes to be able to find things in the Torah. But you should know, he says, Hakol Kasuvba. You need to be aware that everything is there. It can all be found. Just you may not know how to find it. So go to someone who knows how to do that. The same way, when we have a medical issue, any doctor will tell you that the patients who go and start Googling their own remedies and figuring out how to cure themselves have no understanding of the medicine at all, have no understanding of the condition, no appreciation for what actually needs to be done. You go to an expert. You can Google all day and all night. I would venture to say none of us would open up a patient and start operating on them because we're Googling what to do. Because we know that we're ill-informed. We know that we don't know. We know that we have no background and no understanding. It doesn't mean that the information is not there. It just means you don't have it. Because you're just not educated enough. Says the Chafetz Chaim, every engagement that we have in our lives, every challenge and every obstacle that we face can be found in the Torah itself. An individual may not be educated enough to find the answer or to find the Torah's attitude or opinion, but there are people in your generation who do know. There are people who have those eyes. This is why they're referred to as Einei HaEda. They are the eyes of the nation. Why? Because they have a perspective that most people don't have. They can look in the Eitzah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then Rabbi Chanan goes further into this discussion and he says as follows. Im yesh eitzos afilu bishvil haprat. If we believe that there's an eitzah for every individual situation that we might face, kal v'chomer, he says, certainly bishvil klal Yisrael, when you have a Jewish community that faces an obstacle, do you think the Torah doesn't forecast how they should deal with it? What should their approach be? If the Torah is worried about one individual and gives you the opinion, God's opinion of how that person should navigate, do you think for a moment the Torah was not mindful of a community who's in trouble? Yesh b'Torah tziyunim brurim. Bein eila gam al odos yachas ha-Yehudim begalus legabe umas ha-olam. Now he transitions into our discussion and he says, One of the things that the Torah has a lot to say about is, what should the relationship be between a host country and the Jewish people who are not al admasam, who are not in Eretz Yisrael where they're supposed to be? If we decide to engage in politics and we make up our own decisions based on our own understandings without any kind of influence from how the Torah advises us to engage, then he says, "Machnisim es klal Yisrael esakana chamura." We're getting into very dangerous territory. Al doroseinu ha'acharonim orcho ha'yehudim es inyani ha'palitik shelahem behetem la'atzos ha'Torah. It used to be, he says, that when people engage in politics, it was in accordance with the understandings of Torah itself. Ha'tanoim, he says, there were many tanoim. The Mishnah tells us, the Gemara talks about it. There were tanoim who engaged in politics. They had to. And he says those tanoim made sure that before they went out to try to negotiate with the Romans, hayinagim lilmodes parshas Yaakov Esav, they sat down together. They learned through the Torah and all the Mefarshim about Yaakov and Esav. How did Yaakov engage with Esav? What did he do? What's the approach? What's the answer? And they debated and they discussed and they came up with a plan based on the sources that they were all familiar with. Visham matzu kiyum lipu ulasam, and that's where they found instruction of how they should move forward. Bidorenu, he says, in our generation, anu batlu es kavod haTorah, unfortunately we don't have that respect for Torah in this regard. Eitel haTorah b'ayim rakim shelos binyanei amiras kaddish. So we come to the rabbi, we come to the Talmud Chacham. We have a question about Kaddish. When do I start? When do I finish? How long is the Shiva? When is the Shloshim? These are the questions we ask, he says. But Shelos Shel politics, when we talk about political communal issues, he says, Shelos Hanogos L'Chlal Yisrael, when we talk about issues that have relevance to the entire Jewish people, Mafkiya Mitachas Rishus HaTorah, we don't look for guidance in the words of the Torah itself. Hamamunim Levar Shelos Elu, and who are the ones that make these decisions on behalf of the Jewish people? Heim Anshei HaPolitik, these are our politicians. V'kosvei HaTzeitgun, and the reporters in the newspaper, are the ones who are shaping public opinion for the Jewish people. Is this not amazing? This was written almost 100 years ago. Heim Heim Manhigei Ador, these are the leaders of our generation. Somebody made a comment to me recently. He gets the Mishpacha magazine every week. Okay, a lot to say. But he told me that he finds it fascinating that the hashkafa of the Jewish community is determined by the writers in the Mishpacha magazine. He's not wrong. He's actually not wrong. And it's fascinating to think about it. Now, you may not read it, but their subscription is over 300,000 Jewish families every Shabbos. And they're getting their hashkafa from some of the nonsensical articles that are being printed, not only in that, but in all these magazines. That's who's deciding what our community should think and feel. Yeah, they're telling us what our perspectives on shidduchim should be, how we should deal with our in-laws, and how we should deal with our parents, and what should the relationships be? Yeah, we're actually getting influenced by reading this nonsense that's based on nothing of Torah values. It doesn't mean they're bad people. It just means they are the ones, says Rabbi Chanan, who are shaping public opinion. They're shaping the hashkafa of the Jewish community because they're the ones who have the newspaper, because they're the ones who print the magazine. Says the Chafetz Chaim, Me'eza Mayan Shoavim Ashitoseim, the politics. Where are they getting their instruction in how to lead? When was the last time they sat down with a great leader of the Jewish people and said, look, this is what our community is facing. How do we handle it? What are we supposed to do? What is the instruction that the Torah advises we follow when facing this kind of challenge? When was the last time that happened? And the Chafetz Chaim goes on and on and on to talk about this issue. I just want to look at the last paragraph that we have here, number 64. This is at the time when there was a very strong movement towards Zionism. This is the 1920s. And there was a lot of discussion in Europe about it, back and forth. Rabbi Chanan's piece that we're reading from is actually called Ikvasa de Mashiach. He's talking about moving ourselves closer toward the coming of Mashiach, and what is that going to look like, and how do we need to prepare ourselves? So these are excerpts from that, and he writes there that we're living at a time, this is the 1920s, She'ein poskim lisok tzion tzion. You have people running around screaming about Zionism and how important Eretz Yisrael is. Rabbi Elchanan writes, I share the sentiment. I don't disagree with them. But he said that has overtaken something else that we need to be crying about. As important as Eretz Yisrael is to the Jewish people, as much as we understand it's a vital organ of who the Jewish people are and it defines us, we cannot only scream, Tzion, Tzion, he says, B'makom lizok, Torah, Torah, U'matehe alea. We need to remember, somebody needs to be out there shouting and screaming, Torah, Torah. That is the focal point of the Jewish people. Biladei ha-Torah, without the instruction of Torah itself, Anu mechusrei hagana, mechusrei ezer v'yesha. Im ha-Torah anu ha-kabirim ba-olam. When we follow the instruction that the Torah gives us, we are the strongest army. V'chamushim ala b'nei Yisrael. Ein zu melitza greida ela emes. This is not just a euphemism. It's not just a way of speech. But this is proven to be true. Hama'usher al yedei divrei yameinu shel shloshes alfei shana. This has been proven from 3,000 years of history. And we know it to be the case. Reb Meir Simcha Midvinsk, the famous Meshech Chachma, writes that in his generation, there was so much intermarriage, so much confusion, and people were getting lost in the culture and society. And as we said, this is always the balance of Ger v'Toshav. On the one hand, you have the Nodi Yehuda in the 1700s telling you, get involved and celebrate the birthday, says the Chasam Sofer, and go out and be a part and engage in all communal affairs and all the matters that are happening around us. But at the same time, when you start to do that, you lose that sense of the ger in you. You become so comfortable as a toshav, you begin to forget what the Jewish people's values are all about and who needs to be the one shaping them. There's a comment Rabbi Chanan once made where he said, it used to be, people used to say, Shvertz is anayid. It's hard to be a Jew. It's hard. We have many expectations. Communal expectations. Expectations that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts before us. He says it used to be the saying, Kashe lihiyot Yehudi. It's hard to be a Jew. He says in our generation, I think it's harder to be a guy. Look around at how corrupt and immoral, how unethical the society is. Look at how provocative and contaminated the culture around us has become. Stop yourself and look how much time people are wasting doing nothing. How unproductive their lives are. How frivolous their pursuits are. And ask yourself, is it so hard to live like a Jew? Who wants to live like that? Who wants to have such an empty, meaningless life? Who wants to be a part of that society? Said Rabbi Chanan, the tagline today is not Kashe Liyot Yehudi. It's not hard to be a Jew today. Yes, there are aspects of Jewish life that are difficult. But it's harder to submit ourselves as thinking people, as upstanding human beings who want to live life of virtue. It's hard not to be a Jew. It's hard to look around the world and say, I share the values with any of these people in my office. I share values with anybody who I sit on the train with. I am so distant and apart from everything they stand for. Says Rabbi Chanan, it's harder nowadays to actually submit ourselves to be a goy than it is to actually commit myself to be a Jew. That's the perception we should have. The Meshech Chachma writes, as I said, this became a very famous piece for only one line of it, where the Meshech Chachma bemoaned the fact that Jews in his generation were saying, Berlin ze Yerushalayim. That became a very, very famous line. People were celebrating the culture and society so much that they said, Berlin is like Yerushalayim, we don't need Yerushalayim anymore. That's the famous line of the Meshech Chachma, but he has a whole beautiful piece before that, where he writes, Yaakov Avinu was the first one who had to take his family out of this bubble, out of this cocoon of Jewish life. And he had to insert them all into a culture and society that was foreign to them. And what did Yaakov Avinu do? Rashi tells us in the very beginning of Sefer Shmos, Sheloshinu es Lashonam, Loshinu es Malbushehem. The Medrash tells us that the Jewish people chose at that time to keep their Jewish names, to keep their clothing, because Yaakov Avinu understood, if we don't do something, we're only 70 people, what's going to happen? We're 70 people in an entire society that is against all the values and morals that we stand for. We have to do something to remind ourselves of who we are. And that is why it was important to him that he gave over that message, but it didn't stop there. Yaakov Avinu knew that over time, this message would be corroded. This message would not be strong. And that is why, says the Meshech Chachma, he argues in a very long piece. This is what I gave out last week. We don't have time to read it, but I encourage you to go through it. The Meshech Chachma writes, this is why Yaakov Avinu made his children promise. Pakod yifkod Elokim eschem, v'halisem es atzmosai mizeh itchem. He made his children promise that they were going to bury him in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Why was it necessary? Eretz Yisrael needs your burial there? Yaakov Avinu understood that he needs to ingrain into his children that the ultimate destiny is not where they are now. The future of where we are needs to be focused on Eretz Yisrael, and it always had to be that way. Yaakov Avinu understood if he didn't give these instructions, the Jewish community would be lost. He knew that over time, they would become so much a part of the culture and society in Mitzrayim. He needed them to have an image in their minds. Yes, yes, Yaakov Avinu made us promise that Eretz Yisrael is where he needs to be. That was not just for himself, but that was for every Jew, and not just for that generation, for every Jew moving forward, to remind ourselves in the back of our minds, in the subconscious, while we engage, while we're involved, while we go out and we vote, while we do everything that a good citizen is supposed to do, we need to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Not physically, but we need to teach our children that that is where the future of the Jewish people needs to be, and ultimately will be. And if you don't believe that, says the Meshech Chachma, you'll be the same story as we had in Mitzrayim. V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael, only 1/5 of the Jewish people came out because everybody else simply didn't believe where the destiny of the Jewish people will play out. And that is what the Meshech Chachma writes. It is what all the great Gedolim have written. The same thing will play out in our generation. For all those who don't believe, they'll be left behind. And there will be those who do believe in the destiny of what the Jewish people is all about. They will experience what Yerushalayim, what Binyan Beis HaMikdash, and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's return to the Jewish people is going to look like. There is an amazing medrash in the Medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Noach. We know after the great flood, after the Mabul, what is the first thing that Noach does to try to see, to gauge what's happening out there in the world? He's terrified. And he sends out a bird, he sends out a dove, a Yonah. And what does the Torah say? What happens? It comes back. Why does it come back? Well, the Pasuk says, "V'lo matza ha-yonah manoach lekaf ragla." The bird would have loved not to have come back, but there was no place in the world for the Yonah to even put its footing down. There was no pedestal, there was no tree. There was nowhere that a bird could have gone. So it traveled around the world and came back to Noach and said, "I'm sorry that I'm back, but I have nowhere to go." Writes the Medrash, She'ilu matza manoach lo haisa shava. If the bird would have found a comfortable place to stay, it never would have come back. Who wants to be confined? Who wants to live a life constricted in a box? As massive as it may have been, I had enough being with you, Noach, and being stuck here in the Teva. Of course the bird would have loved to leave. But lo matza Yona manoach lekaf ragla. Parallel that with a pasuk in Megillas Eicha. We lay it on Tisha B'Av. Hi yashva bagoyim. It's in the first parak, the third pasuk of Sefer Eicha. Hi yashva bagoyim is a reference to the Jewish people. We were out there in the world living in Galus, which is a description that the Navi has of the Jewish people at the time. What's the end of the phrase? Lo matza manoach. Says the Medrash, it's the same. That same time that a Yonah, lo matza manoach, that Yonah tried to send the bird out, and it just couldn't find a comfortable place to stay and had to come back. The Jewish community is the same. Hi yashva bagoyim, we are out there in exile, lo matza manoach. We don't find a comfortable place where everything's perfect. It just doesn't work that way. Why, says the Medrash? Ilu matza manoach lahaisa choseres. If life was perfect for the Jewish people, lohaisa choseres. They would never come back. Why would they? In fact, the second time Noach sends out the bird, when everything subsided, it did not return. Why? Because who needs you anymore? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure, says the Medrash, lo matza manoach. This is part of the plan. And we look at countries and communities that have done such injustice to the Jewish people over the many, many millennia of Jewish history. And we remind ourselves, all of that is part of this lo matza manoach. Because ilu matza manoach, lo haisa choseres. If we would have been so comfortable, then Eretz Yisrael would be an unrealistic possibility to any of us or to our children. And look through the history of the Jewish people how true this is. We're all familiar, we're reading the story now of Avraham Avinu. What happens with Avraham Avinu? So the beginning of the story, as we read in the Midrashim, Rashi tells us, Avraham Avinu is persecuted by his own family. His own father tries to destroy him. He's thrown into the Kivshan HaEsh, lo matza manoach. And what happens immediately after that? What's the very next pasuk? Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladetecha ela aretz asher hareka. You're in a very uncomfortable situation. There are people looking out to destroy you. The obvious next step is go to Eretz Yisrael, where a Jew belongs. That's the way it's supposed to be. It didn't stop with Avraham Avinu. You look at the life of Yaakov Avinu, when he's having trouble with Laban. And he lives in the home of Laban. And at some point, Laban's children think that Yaakov Avinu is stealing from them. And they turn to their father, Vayishma's Divrei B'nei Laban Lamar. And he overhears the children of Laban, his brothers-in-law, talking to him. And they're saying, Lokach Yaakov es kol asher la'avinu. Yaakov is a thief. He's done everything to destroy us. Ma'asher la'avinu elsa es kol hakavod hazeh. Everything that Yaakov has is only because of us. Yaakov sees. Vayar Yaakov es penei Laban. Yaakov sits down to dinner that night with his father-in-law, with his brother-in-law, and he sees all of them. V'hinei enenu imo kitmol shoshom. Suddenly he sees, wow, this is not the same. Usually we sit down, we have a nice time. I see that now he's not okay with me being here anymore. What's the very next pasuk? What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell him? Vayomar Hashem el Yaakov, Shuv el Eretz Avosecha, Ulamolad Techa ve'ehyeh imach. You're becoming uncomfortable with Lavan and his family. They're coming to a point where they just don't like you anymore. Lo matza manoach. You know what the answer is? Go to Eretz Yisrael where you belong. Ve'ehyeh imach, and I will be there with you. I'll hold your hand. I'll support you. This is the story of the Jewish people that has always been the Lo Matzah Manoach. She'ilu Matzah Manoach Lo HaYechozrim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu ensured that we would never have an opportunity to forget our identity as a people. We would never forget our connection to what Eretz Yisrael means to us. The story of the Ramban, in 1263, the Ramban lived in the Spanish city of Barcelona. And the Ramban was invited or ordered by the king, King James I of Spain, that he needed to come and debate the Christian authorities about religion. And they had this debate, and the Ramban, by all measures, defeated the other religions, only to find out later on that his life was going to be destroyed and he had to be on the run. It is at that moment that the Ramban had no choice but to run to Eretz Yisrael. Anybody ever seen the Ramban Shul in Yerushalayim? That's what it's about. The Ramban writes, when he came there, he couldn't find a minyan in Yerushalayim to daven with. But he went there, all because Lo Matzah Manoach L'Kaf Ragla. And that is what began in the days of the Rishonim, that period of Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. In the 1600s, 1648, 1649, Gezeiras Tach V'Tat, which became very famous or infamous. And as a direct outcome of all of that, just a few years later, the Baal Shem Tov and all of his Talmidim understood the destiny of the Jewish people is obviously not here. Lo Matzah Manoach L'Kaf Ragla, this is not where history is going to play out. We need to find another place. And that is why it's unknown why the Baal Shem Tov himself never made it. But he sent his brother-in-law, Reb Gershon Kitever. It's very famous that he went. At the same time as the Vilna Gaon encouraged all of his Talmidim to go as well. And they built the Yishuvim in Yerushalayim and in Tzvat and in Tiberia and Petach Tikva. And all the communities began from moments like that of Lo Matzah Manoach L'Kaf Ragla. The Torah Temima writes that this comment of the Medrash, when the Medrash puts together the story of Yonah by the Teva and the story of the Jewish people in Sefer Eicha, Lo Matzah Manoach, that same phrase, the Torah Temima writes, Hine Hadrasha Hazos Yekara Hi Me'od Bahashkafasa Habeira. This is so powerful, he writes. Vahod kola yishama bechol dar vador ad hayom hazeh. And the reverberations, the echoes of that sentiment can be felt to this very day, and we know it's true. So let me close with one final comment of the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim is a lot of beautiful mishalim. And the truth is, this is all very nice, everything we spoke about, I hope. But at the same time, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. It's draining to be part of the Jewish story. It's taking a long time. And even when we had Eretz Yisrael as a gift that was given to us 75 years ago, we still have paid a tremendous price and continue to pay that price. And it's just exhausting. So the Chafetz Chaim tells a mashal, trying to encourage Jews to have perspective. You ever watch a ceremonial guard? When you have a prime minister or president comes to visit a foreign country, and they have a certain segment of the army, I don't know what they're called, on official duty to welcome that other head of state who is honoring them with his presence. I've watched these things. I'm always fascinated by it. I don't know why. Maybe it's in line with what the Gemara says. The Gemara tells us, La'olam yaretz adam likras malchei umas ha'olam. The Gemara says, you should see the prestige. You should see the honor that is accorded, that is given to a non-Jewish king. She'im yizke. Yavchin, because someday, if you have that kind of understanding and you say to yourself, wow, Air Force One with the helicopters, with all the National Guard out to greet this person, and you see what kind of honor and respect and kavod they give to a human being, Im Yizke, says the Gemara, someday you'll understand when Mashiach will come what real kavod is all about. You'll have something to compare it to, because that's going to be even greater. So the Gemara says we should have some kind of image, some kind of picture, to know what to look forward to. So maybe I can justify my wasting time watching these things based on that Gemara. I don't know. But says the Chafetz Chaim, sometimes it happens. You have a very important person who made up to be at a certain time in a certain place. They don't show up on time. I don't want to call anybody out, but we did just have two chief rabbis here over the last week. One was the Sephardic chief rabbi, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi was here on Sunday. I learned, as much as you make a schedule, and they ask you to make a schedule, your schedule is irrelevant. And when they decide to show up, they'll be here. And when they decide they're not showing up, they won't be there. That's the life important people live. They make their own schedule, and everything else doesn't seem to matter. So, says the Chafetz Chaim, you have a king, you have a prime minister, you have a president who's doing an inspection of the ceremonial guard, and they're hours and hours and hours waiting there on the runway for this welcome. And they're all standing there at attention. You ever wonder how long can those soldiers outside of Buckingham Palace actually stand there with those bears on their heads? How long can you stand there in the sweltering heat? But they do. They're faithful and loyal soldiers, part of the armed guard, and they feel a pride to do the job that they're doing. At some point, after they're standing at attention for so many hours, the commanding officer turns to one of his younger soldiers and he says, look, I'm so exhausted. We've been out here all day. It's so hot. Can you get me a chair? I just need to sit down. And he gets a chair, sits down, falls asleep. And as he's dozing off, as he's falling asleep, the honored guest shows up at that moment. And he's startled and he's shocked and he's disoriented. He doesn't know where to put himself. He doesn't know what to do. And all the soldiers who were standing at attention are continuing to stand at attention except for him. And the prime minister, the king, walks over to him and he says, so here I pay these soldiers a measly salary. I give them some basic government benefits to do what they do. And they're faithful and loyal to their job and they're devoted to the cause. And you? You're the commanding officer. You have all the privileges that every minister in our cabinet has. You're the highest ranking officer and official that we have. This is how I find you. Falling asleep on the job. The one thing I asked you to do, to stand here and wait on guard, to give respect to the Malchus, and he fires him. You're not worthy of remaining here in this duty, in this job, because you're clearly not faithful, you're not loyal, you don't understand what your tafkid is. The Chafetz Chaim said, we say in our davening every Shabbos, Masai timloch b'tzion, ki mechakim anachnu lach. We're waiting for our Kadosh Baruch Hu to come back. We understand that that's where Jewish history needs to play out. Ki mechakim anachnu lach. We are part, says the Chafetz Chaim, of that honor guard who stands there and waits with loyalty, with devotion, for the Melech to come. We all say it, Ki mechakim anachnu lach. But it's exhausting at times. And we ask for a chair. And says the Chafetz Chaim, can I just sit out a few minutes? Can I just take a little break from this Judaism thing? This is becoming exhausting. Look at the society and the culture and we just don't fit in. Look at the values that they uphold and look where our community is headed. and we're at odds with each other. And it's exhausting to continue to stand guard and be the ones who are mechakim anachnu lach. What are we waiting for? Is this ever going to come? And we decide to take a chair. You know what? Let's bow out from this responsibility that we have. Let's take a little break. We've been on guard for a few thousand years. It's a little bit too long. And at that moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes, Masai Timlech B'tzion. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, you don't want to be that one who's going to be sitting on the chair when that moment comes. The moment that our grandparents and great-grandparents yearned for, cried for, aspired toward. It's the moment where all of Jewish history finally comes to a close, where the circle finally comes around, where the circuit is completed. Don't be that person, says the Chafetz Chaim, who's going to be found by the Melech himself sitting out on the chair because he's just too exhausted. When we say every Shabbos, Ki mechakim anachnu lach, says the Chafetz Chaim, Tzrichim lios mesunim v'savlanim etzel hamtanazu, shahare be'eza menutin hifsid sar hatzava es mesharso. Just because for a few moments this person sat down on his chair, he lost his job. He lost his position, he gave up everything that he had. And writes the Chafetz Chaim, we have the opportunity to do the very same. To see what our duty is as the Jewish people living in Galus. To understand that all of this was destined by none other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. But at the same time, he has expectations for us. The Ribono Shel Olam has shared with us what it is that he expects of us, what it is that he wants of us, what it is that he wants us to do as we go through this difficult and complicated journey, this balance, this delicate balance of ger v'toshav, of being like Avraham Avinu and understanding that at the same time that we feel at home, at the same time that we feel we have equal rights and we have the opportunity to vote, and we should be involved like all the Tanaim did, and all the generations had the same kind of perspective, we always need to remember we are only a ger. We are not a toshav, we are a ger. And the future of the Jewish people, as it always has been, is lo matza manoach lekaf ragla. There is going to be a time where this too, this reality, will not be our future. Ki mechakim anachnu lach. It's not something that we just believe in, it's something that we know will be the case. It's something that we yearn for. Nafshi laHashem mishomrim laboker, mishomrim laboker. We are that body of people who are the watchmen for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and wait in earnest for the moment when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will finally come back and return us to the place where we all need to be. Wishing everyone